special success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand, divided we fall.
Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, broadcasting live across 26 AM FM stations worldwide. And also welcome to our New Zealand, American and European listeners, as you all seem to be tuning in regularly. And also the archive listeners. You guys are actually pretty freaking dedicated, I've found, is that you never miss a show. And we've got a very special guest for you today, ladies and gentlemen. In lieu of Janet and Stuart Swerdlow, we indeed have one of their alleged students who is quite fabulous in her own right. And being from Australia, one would think that somebody who's awake in Australia is quite the rarity. And, yeah, we're all about sourcing the rare and valuable resources on this show. So, Norma Venables, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vinny. Nice to be here.
I'd love it if you could give me a bit of a breakdown about yourself, who you are, and, yeah, what you're doing in terms of anti-New World Order activities.
Well, Vinny, I was born in England, and I grew up in New Zealand, and all my life I've been kind of a little bit different, you know, like, you know, when people talk about aliens and things like that, you know, I've never been surprised or upset, and I've never, you know, disbelieved that any of that goes on anywhere, and you know, as a younger person, I used to, you know, I tried looking at religion and, you know, this and that and the other thing. I dabbled with Buddhism and I looked at all sorts of things. And it just never kind of felt right, you know. It's like it just didn't go there. And then a few years ago now, a friend of mine was going to Auckland to a little seminar of Stuart's. And, you know, and I thought, oh, yeah, I'll go along and have a look. Well, as soon as I met him and heard what he had to say, I thought, well, this is it. You know, here's a man who has been through hell and back with, you know, with the experiences that he's had. And, you know, it just sort of sounded true. So anyway, I decided to listen to him and learn about what some of the things that he's got to say. And here I am.
Okay, and what's that noise going on in the background there? Something keeps hitting the microphone.
No, I don't know.
Okay, well, it's very strange. Well, in either case, what we're kind of talking about in this day and age is solutions. And I find that any solution is fraught with problems. And the solution, therefore, is to just deal with having so many problems.
Exactly, you know, and that's the thing, you know, at the end of the day, the only people or person really that we can deal with is ourselves. And, you know, if we you know, are responsible for ourselves, you know, and everybody's responsible for themselves, then actually we wouldn't have any problems. But what we do is, you know, most of us, when we've got problems, we blame everybody else and sundry. You know, it's the government's fault or my friend's fault or my mother's fault or my father's fault. So, you know, we have to take responsibility and understand that whatever happens in our life is that, you know, we've attracted it into our lives and it's up to us to deal with it because it's there for us to look at and learn from.
Now, does that also mean that you can externalize and just go, okay, that person's a bad influence on me. I don't want them in my life. And you just kind of get rid of them. Not in a murderous kind of mafioso sort of way, of course. You just don't talk to them. and avoid them.
Right, but the thing is, there's a lesson there for you as well. You know, there's a lesson for me. You know, if I'm attracting people in my life that are upsetting me, well, there's something in me that I need to look at. Where am I upsetting myself? You know, and that's what it does. Everything and everything we see, every person we see, is a reflection of us.
Well, I guess it's just because that's how we think about it, because we always compare ourselves to other people. So therefore, other people really are a reflection of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're looking at other people through your own eyes. And I think it's kind of like, do we have like this massive egocentric population who just don't care about anybody naturally? Or is that something that's been gradually conditioned into us?
Well, I believe it's conditioned into us. I think that most human beings are inherently, kind and care about other people. But, you know, nowadays we have, you know, we have the nuclear families. We don't have extended families anymore. You know, the government keeps us all on edge by putting in, you know, policies where, you know, people can't get work. The housing's expensive and all that sort of stuff, and it just puts so much pressure on us that at the end of the day we think, well, we've got to look after I've just got to look after myself. I haven't got the resources anymore to be looking after other people and being kind to my neighbour.
Well, I think it's like the whole point is, somebody can probably generate enough work and enough resources to take care of themselves and make sure that they're survived and happy and healthy and whatever. But if you go out and you're trying to give everybody that, it'll take more than you got. And I see a lot of people out there who want to do the right thing, who essentially waste themselves on people that won't help themselves anyway. And I think that's a problem that I realized in myself not too long ago, actually, that I was always trying to fight for the underdog, even though the underdog was the underdog because of their own devices. So it's just like, well, if people can't help themselves, and if my help doesn't actually spur them on to improve in some way, then they're basically wasting my time. I'm wasting my life.
But the thing is that my point about it was that if I take responsibility for myself and take care of myself, then it gives me, you know, other people can see that I'm doing it. So it's like it's like being a role model. It's like you know, you get out here and you speak out and you bring the truth to people. You know, that's all you have to do. You don't actually have to convince anybody. You have to sort of just present it, and people can take it or leave it. You know, neither of us are here to convince anybody of our point of view or convince people that things are the way they are. You know, they can take it or leave it, really. But, you know, it's just what I'm saying is that, you know, there are times when I see people who they could offer a helping hand to others, but they just don't, because it's just like, it's conditioned in us now, I think.
Well, you know, conditioned in us by what?
Well, you know, by you know, our programming, by the, you know, we get, and the stuff that we get from the media and all that sort of stuff, you know. You know, I can remember when, you know, to be horrible to somebody in the media, on the TV, to put them down was absolute no-no. But now it's entertainment. The nastier people can be to one another, it's entertainment. And it just, I don't know, just drives me wild. You know, that's not nice. You know, you need to encourage people, give them a hand up, not put them down.
Well, you know, you're supposed to give people a hand up, not a hand out. You know, because it's like we're sort of conditioned, I believe, to be dependent, right? And work ethic, I think, for example, is one of the main things that has been undermined. You know, you see people leaning around doing nothing and not being creative with their job, not improving, and they'll stay in the exact same job. I'm talking about a friend of mine. They've been in the exact same job with virtually no pay rise of any significance above inflation whatsoever. For something like 8 years, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a really, really low-down job with zero with zero prospects, basically. Why does somebody subject themselves to that kind of, I don't know, is it a selfless servitude to just serve somebody who serves something that has no soul, like a corporation?
But fear, you know, we're bombarded with fear all the time, you know, to fear, you know, and it's, you know, to get out of to think outside the square and to step outside of it. I mean, you've got to be pretty brave to do that these days, because somebody's standing there with a hammer to whack you as soon as you say something that's different than the main, you know, the main sort of consensus of opinion, then you're hammered, you know. You have to be very brave. And if you're, you know, a sort of person who isn't very brave like that, it's very difficult.
Well, the difficulty is just in that in itself. It's just difficulty, though. It comes and it goes. And if you work at things that are really frustrating, you'll figure out soon enough whether or not it's possible to change that situation or whether it's impossible, whether or not it's worth your energy. You know,
yeah.
Like if somebody were to tell me, Vinny, here's a 200-ton stone. I want you to drag it from one end of a courtyard to another. I'll just be like, bro, that's impossible. I can't do that. You can't even do that with the strongest crane in the world. You know, what's going on here? And what I find is that people are sort of considering other human beings to be an impossible object to overcome. So they don't bother. They don't bother getting to know people. Because they fear that they'll fail, that it's so difficult to get along with somebody, so difficult to go out to a meeting or organize something, that it's just not worth the effort. And so they resign themselves to doing absolutely nothing. And they accomplish absolutely nothing.
Mm.
What makes people do that? I mean, is that fear? Is that fear of not becoming a success at what you're trying to do? Is that fear of being rejected speaking? Or is it something deeper?
Well, I think it's all of that. And I also think it's the programming. You know, we're programmed to isolate. We're programmed not to reach out and do things. You know, we're programmed through the media and, you know, everything. We're just programmed to not want to reach out, to not want to, you know, be noticed.
Well, is that what it is? It's basically just crying out for attention because we all kind of get ignored. You know, we've all just sort of seen this big mummy and daddy figure, whether it be our prime minister or our president in the White House. You know. As our big mummy and daddy figures, oh, they take care of us, oh, doesn't it feel nice? But you realise, in reality, they don't care whatsoever. In fact, virtually every contact that you have with the government is usually something that you don't want. Jury duty, taxes, parking tickets, you know, things of a rudimentary nature, which don't make you feel terribly at home in your own home, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And people just, you know, I really think that's all it is, that people just, it really is a fear thing. And it's like it's, you know, I don't know, it's projected out somehow that, you know, just don't stand out, you know, and, you know, be happy with what you've got and don't try and improve yourself. And, yeah. And, you know, but for some people, you know, when you hear something or see something and you think, oh, maybe there's something in that. So then you know, you get on the Vinnie Eastwood show or you get into the archives and you start learning things. You know, you get onto David Icke and all those sites and, you start learning things and you suddenly realise that, hey, you know, there's a whole world out there and there's all this stuff going on and how amazing it is. And I just can't understand for the life of me how anybody can ever be bored.
Well, you know, I think it's the fact that they're not being creative. I mean, when children used to play outdoors, for example, remember when children used to play outdoors? Now they just sit inside and play video games. They're absorbing yep. other people's creativity and having to come up with none of their own.
Yeah. Yep, there's all that. It's all that's in there, you know. And you're right what you say, you know. And but then, on the other hand, you go to playgrounds and, you know, they've got special turf on the floor, on the ground, so the kids won't hurt themselves. They're not allowed to do this. They're not allowed to do that. They've got safety nets up all over the place. You know, when my boys were little, man, they did, you know, they did everything. They were hanging in trees and doing things. They had a broken arm and a broken leg and whatever. But, you know, they learned. They experienced life.
Yeah. Why do we want to live in some kind of cushioned existence? Because if you can't feel pain, you don't know the joy of real pleasure. All right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. But that's what happens, you know. Kids don't know how to play anymore. And there's so many restrictions when they're out there doing it that it's not playing.
And to what extent is that the parents' fault, though? Or to what extent is it the schoolyard's fault? All these regulations kind of get put on the day-to-day activities of quote-unquote normal life, where everybody just basically doesn't need any rules to follow. They just do normal stuff anyway, and they all know what's wrong and what's right. So why exactly is it such a massive burden on people to follow inordinate amounts of procedure, like in bureaucracy, for example? You have a school, and they've got this new education program now here in New Zealand called NCEA, which went on from another education program, another and another. You know, people here in New Zealand, they used to be really creative, intelligent, and they built up this country. They had all their businesses. They had a strong work ethic. You know, there wasn't too much divorce, wasn't too much debauchery. Now look at it. Progressive education, ladies and gentlemen, isn't it a fabulous thing? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Norma Venables from Australia, and we'll be right back after this very short break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, theVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Check out our fabulous archives there because I have, I say we because there's so many people who contribute to the show. Callers, listeners, you know, everybody who sends us in feedback or rings up or anything like that becomes basically part of the content. Now, what I find interesting is that you can just put two intelligent people in a room and have them talk to each other, and it makes for interesting listening. And I'll admit, this has happened to me many times. I'll just be walking down the street and I'll hear two people talking about something and I'll just stop and I'll listen to them. That's all that people really need in their lives. They just need to absorb something nice. You know, by osmosis. My very special guest, speaking of osmosis, because she's from Oz, you see, is Norma Venables from the desert. Fire ridden and Masonic hand clasped shaken Prime Minister Julia Gillard's state of Australia. Welcome back.
Thank you, Vinny. I've actually come back from London. I was right in the middle of a little Illuminati nest there.
Oh, yeah. Did you go to 10 Downing Street and have a look at all the Masonic symbolism on the door, you know?
I didn't. And I got out of there. I left there in the week between Easter and the royal wedding. I want to be out of there while that royal wedding was going on, so yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You probably would have been dawn raided for no reason like everybody else did.
Terrible. Yeah.
Oh yeah. The Department of UK pre-crime is very advanced, I hear. Did you notice any police state measures being taken in the UK while you were there?
Not while I was there, no.
Yeah, you know, like no people in scary uniforms with guns and such like that strutting around checkpoints, security cameras everywhere.
Well, they have got security cameras everywhere. It's, you know, I did actually notice that because I went looking one day, and they're absolutely everywhere. You can't go anywhere without being photographed. That's true. And a little while ago, when the new government came in, they've got that coalition government there, and they were saying that they weren't going to put the students' fees up. And, of course, as soon as they got in power, you know, all that changed. So they had these huge demonstrations. You know, the students were all up and out, arms and out on the streets. And, you know, I found it really sad because those kids were all out there protesting. It was a peaceful protest. You know, the young guy that was leading it was just—he was a really lovely young man, and he led this protest. And of course, it was the faction that comes in to stir up trouble, and they ended up. The place looked like a bomb site. There were fires everywhere. They smashed the windows in the all the buildings around there, and it was absolutely revolting. And then they, you know, the next day they interviewed this young man on the TV. And I just felt so sorry for him because he just kept saying, look, it was a peaceful protest. And they weren't listening to him. They didn't want, you know, they didn't want to hear his point of view. All they did was focus on all that stuff. So the reason that they had the protest was totally lost because they focused on all that other stuff.
Well, I think it's kind of like distractions are deadly, and the government are the masters of distraction, which is why they're so deadly. Incidentally, yeah. You know, every kind of like terror sort of related incident when it comes to Western countries winds up having government hands all over it, time after time. You know,
exactly. Yeah, but you know, most people don't know that, Vinny. Most people think that, you know, there was a you know, just the students were stirring up trouble, and you know, that's, they don't recognise that. You know, that was probably stirred up by the government. You know, it's just so sad. I just find it really sad. You know, and so there's no freedom of speech anywhere. That's for sure, except on your show, of course.
Well, you know, there's levels to freedom of speech. I mean, for example, now we're on FCC regulations. So if I were to say the word F, you know, it just kind of violates it, and they could have dangerous repercussions. And I'm always a fan of just saying a big FU to the FCC. And basically, The whole goal is in my life, and this is something that I've been doing since a very young age. I always push boundaries, very, very often. I mean, I can't help it. You know, you'll either really, really love me, or I'll make you hate me. But you know, I'll never be anybody's enemy. You know, somebody has to basically declare war on me in order to become an enemy of mine, because I don't I don't really get caught up in the whole adversarial type. Oh, I wanna take you on or whatever. For me, that is taken up exclusively by my fight to the death against the whole general New World Order. So essentially, I've got a million enemies. Why do I need one more?
Exactly. Well said.
You know, am I just that silly? You know, it's beyond belief that somebody would actually go out cruising for trouble. Mate, there's enough trouble on your doorstep already. They are already killing you in your sleep. With your waking eyes, you can see them killing you.
Yeah,
All right? EMF radiation coming out of all the wireless and technology and all of that kind of stuff there. Australian Research Foundation, government organisation. Back in 2004, I believe it was, something around those lines, released a study with the possibility of connecting brain cancer to electronic devices like cell phones and data packets from wireless devices and everything in between. Everything that we're currently saturated with is doing some kind of damage, all right? They determined that by the year 2020, there would be 2 billion cases of brain cancer.
Yeah.
Okay, and incidentally, the only newspaper that reported their findings was the New Delhi Times. you know,
yeah.
So basically, and this brings me up to another point: censorship and copyright laws. Every alternative news source, basically, is an aggregate of a lot of just different mainstream media that doesn't get the hype that it perhaps it should. For example, a single article in the New Delhi Times really needs to be repeated a lot more than it was by conventional mainstream media, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So therefore, all we need to do is have all those articles that mainstream media puts out and do a little bit of research on them, of course, that they don't, you know, put on the front page. The stuff on the back pages are quite amusing. And new censorship laws, new copyright laws being introduced in New Zealand will make doing that, copy-pasting articles, illegal. So it's going to destroy the alternative media's leg up that we've got on mainstream media, basically, because we can just take all their stories. And, you know, and promote them out to people who want to actually look at those particular types of things. Now, this is an interesting point in history where I'm thinking that the independence of the truth and patriot and spiritual whatever movement, we all know who we are, basically, we need to be able to make our own media be completely independent and do all of our own researching and reporting ourselves. And there's a network of television being launched at the moment called UNN, the Underground News Network. It's launching in a few, I think about maybe 13 days, I think. And it's basically just a television channel full of nothing but alternative truth movement news.
Really?
Okay, so at the same time that these copyright laws are coming into effect, the very solution for them is already being implemented.
Fantastic.
You know, and this is the thing. This is the reason why the New World Order can't beat us, okay? Because they've only got a few minds at the top that are doing the decision-making. We've got a billion minds doing decision-making for themselves, being completely independent and ruthlessly exploiting every weakness that presents itself, okay? You can't fight an enemy on a billion fronts. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, they've been pretty successful up to now, but I think that, you know, as more and more people become aware, you know, this is going to happen, you know, more and more people speak out. I think it's, you know, it's getting to the point now where, you know, things are going to change. Well, they really have to, don't they? You know, the world can't go on the way it is.
Well, I think it certainly can go on the way it is, but it'll change into something that we definitely don't want to see. And I was commenting with a friend of mine last night, you know, about how fossil fuel engines and all of that kind of stuff, well, sorry, petroleum engines, I don't like to use the term fossil fuel because it's a fraud. they've been obsolete for frickin' decades, man. Honestly, like 60, 70 years or something, they've been obsoletely useless.
Yep.
And yet the only reason why we're still driving around in them is because every single technology that basically gets patented that would put them obsolete is classified under national security. You know, they got upwards of 16,000 patents or something like that. It's ridiculous. You know, I could be driving on a cushion of air at 2,000 miles an hour and do a 90-degree turn without feeling any of the force of the gravitation with the patented technologies that are classified under national security. And extremely cheaply, too, and self-generating.
That's right. Okay? Instead, you're polluting the atmosphere, aren't you?
Well, the pollution of the atmosphere matters not to me. What matters to me is the pollution at ground level, because that's the air we breathe. And we've got all these toxic byproducts and unburned hydrocarbons that come out of the exhausts of all of these cars, and they're basically toxic. Take Cairo in Egypt, for example. The air is so thick with pollution that it's like smoking two packs of cigarettes a day. Mm. You know, in Auckland, the main street of Auckland, city of 1 million people, walking from one end of the main street to the other, Queen Street, is the equivalent of smoking five cigarettes. You know, it's beyond belief.
Yeah, the smog was pretty bad in London too, over Easter. You know, that because it was hot, there were a lot of people out and about, and more people coming into the city because of the royal wedding. And I opened the curtains, and I tell you, you could just about hardly see your hand in front of your face. It was so bad. And then, you know, the news reported that it was actually the worst it had ever been in history.
Well, apparently when a vampire appears, fog comes with him.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't see the vampire.
No, you did. You must have seen them on telly. They were together in a carriage, you know, going down the mall.
Oh yeah, those two. Actually, I saw a car. Somebody sent my son an email with they had the Prince Charming and Cinderella and you know and all the carriages and everything, and they matched up exactly with the outfits that the royals were wearing. It was really amazing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, I just saw that email this morning.
Yeah. And coincidence, right. So just a coincidence.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, people talk about that and they go, oh, Vinny, you're reading too much into it. And it's, for example, you know about the Freemasons, right, and how they've got black and white tiling in their lodges because it symbolizes, you know, the channeling of black and white energy or some kind of occult Satanist type thing. You know, Freemasons, all right. You know, I went into this giant Masonic hall, big stack of tiles in the middle, all black and white, arranged beautifully, and a great big pentagram in the middle.
Yeah.
This is not a secular organization, people, okay? And they have their symbols, and any symbol can mean up to seven things. Any word can mean up to seven things to these people. And when you look at the royal wedding, the amount of symbolism that is there that signals the Freemasons' hold over the monarchy is quite astounding. For example, the flooring of Westminster Abbey. What colour tiles did they have? Oh, that's right, it's all black and white.
Yeah.
Where did they get married? Oh, in Westminster Abbey. Okay, so they're married on the Masonic floor. Okay, fantastic. That doesn't mean anything, right? No, absolutely nothing. Only the people who think about these sort of things are crazy.
Yeah, we're all crazy, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I'm sure that the secret rulers of the world are quite happy that people think that we're crazy because we're talking about reality and they're completely nuts and they don't have any pinge on reality and they don't like anybody who does. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest is Norma Venables and we'll be right back after this remarkably fabulous break.
I got some so-called friends, smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the Vinnie Eastwood Show is playing indeed. And also this weekend I will be joining in the United We Strike broadcast, which is full of, I'd have to breach FCC regulations in order to describe in full how effing fabulous the lineup of guests will be. And you'll just have to check that out at UnitedWeStrike.com for the schedule. My very special guest today, however, is Norma Venables. And we're kind of talking about life and a whole range of different topics. The question becomes, if everything is going to Shiite Muslim, as we're pretty sure that it is, at the hands of some very dastardly crooks, what significant part, more to the point, does each individual have to play in the freeing of humanity? What's your opinion, Norma?
Well, it comes again back to awareness, self-awareness of who we are and what we are, and, you know, and really that's it, you know, just who we are and what we are. Then we've got something to fight with, we've got something to act with, we've got something, you know, somewhere to, you know, a place to be with it, you know. It's, you know, we've just, that's how I come at life, is just to have awareness and you know, and get, you know, seek out people who you know, yeah, just, I know what I'm trying to say. It's not coming out too well, but, yeah, and just be aware of what's going on, you know.
Well, okay. Well, you know, it's the world is for those who have eyes to see and ears to listen with. Those who choose to kind of block out things that are there to see and to hear will be the ones who will contribute the least and will probably accomplish the least in their lives, and especially in the terms of personal development, you know. You'd be afraid all your life. You won't. You really won't live a true, free existence, because it's when you know danger, when you know fear, and you overcome it, that's where your strength comes from. That's where your confidence comes from. You realize that you're not made of glass. You realize that you're actually quite strong and quite powerful, and there's very little force on heaven or earth that's capable of resisting you if you really put your mind to it.
Yes, I believe that wholeheartedly.
You know, but this isn't to say that reality doesn't exist, you know, and your will just overcome everything. For example, if you're shot in the head, hey, you're going to die. But
if you do the work and get the right mind patterns, the right mindset about things, you won't be in the position where you get shot. That's what, you know, self-responsibility is all about. You know, you have to get your mind sorted.
Bugging out, for example, when people have decided, okay, it's time to head to the hills, okay, because the tsunami's coming, whatever that might be. The people who just, you know, drop everything and just run, now, are they the crazy ones, or are they going to be the ones who are surviving?
I'd be running, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You do have to. You have to act, but also you've got to get the mind right. You know, the mind pattern has to be right. And then, you end up always being in the right place at the right time. You know, how during the winter, I'm trying to explain what I mean here. During the winter, you get people who, they say to you, oh, I've got the flu. I get the flu every winter, at least once, maybe twice, and they've always get the flu, okay? So their mindset is they're going to get the flu. You get other people who don't ever get the flu. They live in the same house, same environment, but it's not in their mind. It doesn't get in there because it doesn't attract, you know, the flu doesn't get in there because their mind pattern doesn't allow it in. And that's basically how everything is in life. How, you know, if you If it's not in your mind to attract something, you won't. But people who attract, bad relationships all the time, it's in their mind pattern. Once they sort themselves out and it's not in there anymore and they say, oh, no, I don't need this stuff anymore, it doesn't happen.
Well, in the end, everything comes back to the beginning, and what we started off this conversation as being is how do you kind of deal with people who are trying to like attack you and make your life much more difficult than it really needs to be, and just, in my opinion, just give them the flick, don't give them any of your energy, and because they don't deserve any.
Yeah, absolutely right. You do that. But also always remember that, the mind pattern, your mind pattern attracted them into your life in the first place. So it's something for you to look at.
Well, let's say, for example, I'll take myself as an example. I get like somebody on Facebook or Twitter or Skype or something, just giving me hell. For no real reason, nobody else decides to take it upon themselves to contact me just to abuse me and whatnot, but it's happened before. But is that just because I'm doing what I'm doing, just because I'm on the radio show, because I'm visible and because I'm open and anybody can contact me? Is that in my mind pattern?
Well, yeah, and the other thing is that those people too, I mean, they're a part of it as well. But to them, you're a person or a symbol of maybe their mum and dad that they didn't get on with very well, and you're saying things that they need to hear and they don't want to know about it, so they're going to attack you. And that's what happens. You've put yourself up there, and now they're going to attack you. So it makes them feel better. They don't want to take responsibility. They don't want to take responsibility for how things are going in their life. They probably don't have awareness, so they don't want to take any responsibility, and you're saying things they don't want to hear, so they're going to blast you. So, yeah.
But does that mean that it's actually their mind pattern that's doing that and not mine, though?
You've attracted it.
I've attracted it because I have some kind of, how have I attracted it specifically?
There's a part of you that's quite sort of out there and aggressive, and you will have you have your say about things. So, that's in you to be like that. You might not say the same words and you might not do it in the same way, but you do that. Do you understand what I mean? You're out there. So you will attract that.
Okay. But I don't think that's really much to do with mind patterns per se, as just tactics. Like, for example, I could operate under a pseudonym and only have contact through the website and that kind of thing. So I wouldn't have personal contact. I could get off of Facebook, off of Twitter and everything like that and completely withdraw myself. And therefore, I wouldn't attract any of these types of people, would I? So it's in the mind pattern. I'm wondering here, though, is there some part of me that wants a fight, and so a fight comes looking for me? I think that there is because I go out and ambush like our Prime Minister with a camera, So there's obviously just this kind of sneaky, cheeky, I just want to cause a little bit of trouble sort of aspect to me. So, yeah, I can understand people who just want to, let's just give Vinny a little bit of Shiite Muslim. That'll be fabulous.
Well, exactly. So, yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. So that's what happened, If you were, if you lived a life of calm, love and light, and your mind was completely clear of any sort of, I don't know anybody like this, I've got to say, Vinny, but say it was, you wouldn't attract any of that stuff. You'd attract love and light and everything else, but you're not. You're out there and you're fighting the fight, so you are going to attract that sort of thing. It happens to anybody who's, high profile. They're always going to attract their detractors because they're out there doing things. People don't want to know. They want to hear you.
Well, I suppose it's like there's nobody for them to react to other than the people who have already put themselves out there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's kind of like a redneck politician choice for them, you know. It's just like, I hate Negroes, I hate all those people, you know. And as soon as somebody comes up and says what they're thinking, they'll go like, ah, yeah, you're a bad person. I don't like you. I'm going to make sure that your life is absolute hell. It's not going to be a happy existence for you, my friend, because you're saying things that I don't want to hear because I don't care about you, okay? I don't care about anything. F you.
They don't want to take responsibility for themselves. They want to blame you for the story.
Hey, well, you know, I always actually encourage people, please, if you have any doubt in your life about what's going wrong, please, by all means, blame Vinny, okay? Because I'm used to it. And probably deserve it. My very special guest, Norma Venables, it's been my pleasure to have you on here. And coming up next hour, ladies and gentlemen, we have Lynn Horowitz and Sherry Kane joining us live from the irradiated, fabulous paradise of Hawaii off the coast of Fukushima. And we'll be right back after the break. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And speaking of the lighter side of genocide, ladies and gentlemen, on Fridays we like to do a wee movie review for you so that when you go out to see the next polished Illuminati masterpiece of Hollywood, you will know what the symbolism means. My very special guests are Sherry Kane and Lynn Horowitz, live from the irradiated island chain of Hawaii. Welcome to the show, guys.
Well, thanks, Vinny. You know, we decided to fly out of there. I mean, your description of the Hawaiian Islands, once being paradise, now Radio City, you know, music hall for radiation poisoning. You know, we decided that we would fly for this special premiere show and movie review to Hollywood. So we're broadcasting tonight from Hollywood.
Literally.
All right. Fantastic.
This is Tinseltown, bro.
Yeah.
That's just straight up gangster.
That's right.
Yeah, you never know where Big Pharma's Bonnie and Clyde are going to end up.
Right, right. We wish to extend ourselves to discuss the lighter side of genocide.
All right. What movie review have you got in store for us this week?
Well, we saw Thor. Thor is the god
of thunder, don't you know?
The powerful but arrogant warrior Thor is cast out of the fantastic realm of Asgard and sent to live amongst humans on Earth, where he soon becomes one of their finest defenders. And this movie was yet another agenda of the Illuminati to make us hate our government, because the bad guys in this movie were
National Security and CIA. How about that? Along with the frozen people, maniacal, alien extraterrestrials that wish to freeze all the loving hearts, not only on Earth, but those gods in heaven, were actually the ones that, along with NSA and CIA, were the bad guys.
They were the frost giants.
Yeah, the frost giants, they're called. So imagine that, how related that is to those in the CIA and FBI, COINTELPRO, that operate to conduct genocide, freezing humanity's hearts. It was a great metaphor.
It was. Well, really.
What I also found very interesting was the use of false flags in the film. After all, a couple of frost giants somehow managed to find their way into Asgard, and how can you do that? And it turns out it was an inside man all along.
Yeah, how about that? It was the brother of Thor that allowed the bad guys in to potentially kill his dad.
Yeah, it goes way back to this whole story of, you know, kind of like Cain and Abel, the two brothers, one very jealous of the other. So it was a very, very interesting story from that perspective. The cinematography was outstanding. The animations were amazing.
I think the brother of Thor was actually a metaphor of Barack Obama.
Oh, that's wild. How did you figure that one?
Well, think about it. He looked like the hero. He was the one that set it up, and he opened up the door for people to come in. And again, like they're trying to make him to be the hero again and make Barack Obama the hero, the one that captured Osama bin Laden and had him finally killed. Barack Obama's the hero, just like the Thor, brother of Thor, is the hero. There's a parallel there.
Gee whiz, I didn't get that one.
Yeah, isn't that
good? I think that might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Man, I don't know.
Did
you drink that Coca-Cola?
it's the aspartame filling in synapse.
He was a hero, but he was a false hero because his father wanted everybody to believe that he was coming to save his dad, but in reality, he was the bad guy.
Oh, okay. I can see the parallels there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rah-rah Obama.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right.
In the Egyptian sun god sense of the word. Now, we had like this, what was his name? The guy who was kind of like guarding the cannon that was able to transport them anywhere.
The gatekeeper.
Yeah. Right. What was the deal with him? I mean, and to what extent is modern society meant to act as their own gatekeeper?
Well, I think his role was to, you know, he was a blind man, but he could actually feel them. He was an intuit. So he knew who was bad and who was good. He could feel. He went more by his senses than he went by his vision. And so he was a very, very spiritual man. And he was able, like, he opened up the gate for Thor's friends, even though the new king, the brother, said, do not open the gate for anyone. He went against him and opened up the gate because he knew. He knew the thoughts of the father of Thor. He knew that there was something not right here, and he never felt right about that brother, even from the beginning when he tried to pass the gate.
You know, I really liked the more in-depth wisdom that the film relayed concerning the ability of Thor to actually take over for the father, because what was required was this very, very solid lesson of wisdom that included the amount of love that one has in their hearts for peace and humility,
right,
and the ability to realize that you can go to war, but it's far wiser to step away in peace and really just kind of like not so much turn the other cheek, but don't engage the dark side. And that, for me, was the best lesson in the film. And it was interesting how they wove that lesson into this concept of there being gods, extraterrestrials, that came down to Earth, had a bridge to Earth, but in the process of fighting their own battles that included this lesson of wisdom, they had to sever that bridge to Earth so that the gods could no longer return to their beloved Earth people. I thought that was a very interesting concept that was operating as the most, I think, advanced theology that the film was trying to relay.
Yeah, and on a superficial level, though, the bridge was cut because he was fearing that his brother was going to go and hurt his girlfriend on Earth. So he figured he needed to cut the bridge so he wouldn't go hurt her. That was the superficial message, but the deeper message was what you just relayed.
Yeah, that was a deeper message. And why the evil brother decided to challenge the Thor's love on Earth and create that to be the finality, you know, the great ending of the whole film. This concept that his own life all of his investment was completely meaningless without this lesson of deep love and without this understanding of compassion and humility that he realized at the end when he decided to commit suicide and just drop off off of their planet, that it was that level of self-disgust and self-loathing. And again, I think that we've talked about this on past shows, Vinny, how I think that that is the fundamental problem with the human race, that civilization has been dumbed down so much that we no longer appreciate the loving, capable, worthy, spirit-filled people that we are, literally the supermen that we are and superwomen that we are, and that we therefore engage in this illusion of projecting our judgments and our fears and concerns and everything that is wrong with society onto others.
In order to complete this call, you must dial the area code and the telephone number. Thank you for using Magic Jack.
That's very strange right there. You guys, you can still hear me, right?
Yeah, I can hear you. I don't know where that came from.
See, that happens. That happens sometimes. In fact, it happened with a guest the other day. It's very strange because, yeah, we're on Skype. What is that?
Yeah, I don't have any idea what that was.
apparently the Well, I was just going to say, a little interjection here with that sort of interruption. Did you hear that Microsoft has now bought Skype?
Oh, wow, that's interesting. That wouldn't surprise me. So the next thing that's going to happen is as we connect to you next time, Bill Gates is going to inject us via a energetic vaccination.
Of course. And in New Zealand now, we're talking about forced vaccinations. In fact, that's the most recent article that was posted here. It's the end of the era of health freedom, essentially. And big upset about that. But anyway, let's continue on with the movie review. I digress.
That's quite all right. I think digression is appropriate for Thor, the thunder god.
Yeah, really actually a great lesson that he learned, and it was interesting that hammer would not get lifted by anyone. I mean, they had the whole military try to lift it. No one could lift it, and then it was only meant for him to lift once he learned the lesson of humility and once he gave his life up for the people. So that's when the hammer just came flying into his hand.
That level of love in the heart and humility, and that's the same thing over and over again with everything, reality. I mean, if you think of the work that we're doing with 528 Love Revolution, the whole concept is once you get into love, once you really give your heart over to the love of God, the love of humanity, the love of service, the deepest love and affection, as well as humility within us, then suddenly miracles happen, absolute miracles happen. And that's what a lot of the different films and plays. Another great example is Phantom of the Opera, where Christina, representing Christianity at the end, gives her love over to the demon.
Thank you for using
that. That's what kills him. The demon dies because he can't stand the love. Just like in this film, the bad, evil brother couldn't get to that level of love. The father knew he couldn't get to that level of love because he was of a different bloodline. I thought that was interesting too, where the god of thunder, Thor, and his father were of a different bloodline than the ice people, and that the concept of the human population being beloved children, loved by those gods, but not the ice people, I thought that was, again, very interesting and very apropos to looking at what we're currently dealing with fighting the Illuminati, the ice people, that are literally trying to kill us, freeze us, enslave us, intoxicate us, vaccinate us, poison everything, including the environment, and then subsequently, where's the love in that? It's devoid of love. I thought in that respect, the film was really good. And I thought, again, I said the cinematography, animations were outstanding.
But you notice about how the government, even in the end, the only time, meaning when they gave her stuff back that they took, that they stole from.
Oh, yeah, that was a Hollywood, typical Hollywood, you know, fraud.
Yeah, when they gave her stuff back, they made a deal that, okay, Thor will work with you. I'll connect with you if you return her stuff. It had to be under this deal. Otherwise, they wouldn't give her back.
Yeah,
they stole everything.
So the government of the United States made
a
deal with the gods.
Anymore.
Yeah, that they're going to allow research, and this was a hoax, you know, and that's what the only sad thing that I think that really was a complete propaganda at the end of the film was where the United States government, CIA operatives, they gave the nod for the research to continue into searching for the extraterrestrial, the gods of space, and that it's never that way. It's all controlled. The military, medical, petrochemical, pharmaceutical cartel is controlled. And so Hollywood is not going to give you that level of disclosure.
Yeah, I mean, no matter how much you want it, really, and the fact remains that they lay out their tactics in front of you in films all the time. I mean, how many films have you seen where the big bad guy will execute his loyal servants, you know, just after they've done his bidding? How many times will you see that the big bad guy is really who you thought was the big good guy, you know, like the evil emperor of Star Wars? And it speaks to me that we're living in such a time of great betrayal, and I'm talking about the real higher-up betrayers here, where you'll think, you'll absolutely believe, love them to death, because of all the great things that they've done, only to realize later on that, hey, they've been screwing you the whole time and you didn't know about it because you love them too much to notice.
Yeah. And then Sherry's been looking at something else, another Hollywood icon. Michael Moore is in the news recently, tweeting on the death of Osama bin Laden. And I think that I'm sure, Sherry, you can think of some interesting commentary on that.
Well, I mean, what's really weird is that you have Michael Moore talking about, you know, I immediately felt great. I felt relief. I thought of those who lost a loved one on 9/11, and I was glad we finally had a president who got something done. This was Michael Moore's words in regards to Osama bin Laden being killed by the Navy SEALs, not in 2001, but just, you know, last week. So
yeah, so Michael Moore, who takes his money from ABC, Disney, Miramax, Giant at Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein, the paymaster, overseeing Michael Moore's capitalism love story, you know, total controlled opposition, is here celebrating the American president's victory over the Bush family's partner, Osama bin Laden, the bin Laden family. How do you like that one, Vinny?
Well, I think that's just freaking fabulous, isn't it? You know, yeah.
I mean, basically what he's saying is that what Barack Obama took 2 years to do, Bush couldn't do in over seven. So, I mean, it's all a bunch of crap. I mean, they could have done it. They could have done it if they wanted to. They wanted to give it to Bush. They wanted to give it to Obama. I mean, whoever they wanted to give the brownie point to got it. Because they get
it
crazy.
I mean, they had the body on ice the whole time anyway.
Yeah, right.
Right, exactly. If they didn't let him go. If he wasn't sick, they would have let him go and let him live in some other place.
You know, we were talking about, you know, how we saw and we reviewed on your show, I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, the movie The Conspirator.
The Conspirator. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, what happened to John Wilkes Booth? You know, suddenly the truth is he escaped. He was part of the Freemasonry organization. They shipped him to Europe. The film didn't cover that. And we were talking about, well, what happened to Hitler, too? You know, do we really believe that he was blown up in that bunker? It sounds like, you know, Osama Barack Obama's, victory here over Osama bin Laden. Suddenly he gets blown up, and you know, I can't buy a lot of this stuff. It's just it's not what it appears to be.
Because it never is. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. Oh yes, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's alternative media. A very special guest. We'll be in lieu of Len for a moment because he's got other work to do. But we still have the fabulous, darling Sherry Kane on with us at the moment. Sherry, welcome back.
Glad to be back with you, Vinny.
Now, what was
in order to complete this call,
the hottest female sex offenders list that was compiled by whom?
It's in Huffington Post. I sent you the link on your Skype. Houston Press compiles Texas's 10 hottest female sex offenders. I mean, come on. Is this what the news is? Are you kidding me? I mean, is this a total diversion from really what the truth? The offending hotties have assaulted boys and girls ranging from 2 to 16 years old.
Oh, wow.
Are you kidding me? And what are they assaulting them? Oh, man.
Well, and this is at a time when the U.S. is now becoming recognized globally as the human trafficking capital of the world.
Exactly, exactly. And you can't even blame it on the men anymore. That's the diversion. You got to look at the women. Everybody thinks, oh, well, the men have the tool. They're the ones that are going to go out and do it. And here they're putting women out there trying to say, oh, what it is really is it's a help for the pedophiles, the male pedophiles out there, the slimy male pedophiles, and they put these hot women saying, look, there's really even pretty girls. It's not just us. Like, it's a diversion. There's pretty girls that are doing it. It's not just us because we're just weasels.
Well, that's total BS, by the way. I've just had a look through all the photos, and there's not a looker among them. Bunch of mingers, mate. You know, these are the hottest women sex offenders list in Texas. Oh, mate, seriously, lacking in potential. Which makes the news story even doubly useless. Sherry, are you there? Oh, we've lost Sherry. Hold on a second. We need to actually bring her back up, please, if we can. But moving on from the hottest sex offenders, I wanted to retreat back into the story that I was talking about earlier about the enforced vaccinations become a reality. On March 24, 2011, this is in from Health Freedom New Zealand, by the way, the report of the Health Select Committee's inquiry into how to improve immunisation completion rates in New Zealand was presented to government. Government had less than 6 weeks to respond to the report. Now, the report represents a significant attack on parents' rights to make health care decisions for their children. Now, the Health Select Committee, under the leadership of Dr. Paul Hutchison, has produced a report that not only recommends raising the targeted vaccination completion rate to 95% for New Zealand children aged 0 to 4, it also proposes a target to be set for 11-year-olds. Most alarmingly, this report also recommends that the government make children's enrollment at early childhood centres and schools dependent on parents producing proof of their children's vaccination status, and further suggests that government consider linking existing parental benefits to vaccination. This is not a good thing to be behold, I tells you what. Oh, goodness gracious me, Lord. Why do we have to deal with these scum doing this kind of awful scumbaggery stuff to us, man? It's for real. It's beyond a joke now. We can't really, under any circumstances, tolerate forced anything, let alone forced vaccination. I mean, look at it this way. If you're going to pump copious amounts of, thimerosal, mercury, and the people who are quite nasty indeed, i.e. pharmaceutical companies that sell you poisonous crap and then tell you that there's nothing wrong with it, even when it says on the warning label that it can probably kill you. But, of course, in New Zealand, they just remove those warning labels. You know, these are the kind of people we're dealing with, man. Yeah. I mean, come on. It's just beyond... I just can't do it. But I really do want to bring Sherry up to, in fact, talk about this. I need my fabulous board op, Dan, to respond. I'm sorry about this, ladies and gentlemen. We're a bit of a technical hiccup. But, you know, moving on. The forced vaccination thing. I was wanting to say, of course, that supplementary to this, the select committee was indeed visited by Jonathan Eisen and Catherine Smith from Uncensored Magazine, who are, in my opinion, probably the most awesome publication in the country, particularly as it pertains to truth issues. And, of course, they informed this Health Select Committee that nobody could produce evidence that vaccines were either safe or effective, and that virtually all people connected to pharmaceutical approval panels have ties financially to the pharmaceutical industry. And I was wondering, of course, why on that on that frickin' annoying thing. It's like, well, for goodness sake, it frustrates me to no end. And I'm like, what is going on here? I don't... The whole freedom of the country hinges on all these little things all over the place, you know? Any legislation that gets passed, anything that they can get people to accept, like... forcibly inoculation and all of that kind of stuff right, like that. What more will they be able to do after that's done? Okay? They have absolute power in their sight, and they're trying to take it from you. Now, most alarmingly, this report also recommends that the government, basically, if they accept the recommendation in the report, it basically appears that parents will be forced to choose whether their child has no vaccinations or all vaccinations on the schedule in order to be able to supply the documentation necessary to enroll their child in a school or early childhood education centre. Now, I would probably say that that's not really too bad, because it means that your children don't wind up getting brainwashed in a public school and turn into the next generation of slaves, and the parents get to raise them instead. You know, that's a bright side of the issue. But, of course, most people, considering the extortionate tax that we're all frickin' paying on pretty much everything, it's just... Oh. You're getting forced into a corner here. And every single element conspires against you. They want to make you think that there's nothing you can do, that you're powerless, that you're weak, and they will have their way with you. It's kind of like the mentality of a rapist, really. Rapists will leave a woman be if the woman fights back. That's the thing. If we really do resist, fight, bite, scratch, kick, and absolutely go tooth and nail against this type of draconian legislation being passed in defiance of all the reason and logic and scientific documentation, then perhaps that can work as a wormhole for us as well. Like, if we push this back, what else can we push back? Just like the government says, hey, if we can push this through, what else can we push through? We can push stuff back, okay? Getting things repealed in government is one of the things that I really want to see, okay? And I want to see this happening, like, en masse, basically. I want people to be kicking up so much of a stink, stomping around, making every single possible law that is draconian and evil and whatever... Eradicate it, all right? Get it the heck out of here. right? You don't need to give people parking tickets or traffic tickets or any other type of arbitrary fine when there's no victim. You know, show me the freaking victim. But at least I'm not living in Texas, where the cops will just pull over you the side of the road if you've got a nice car and chuck a bag of chalk in the back seat and say, "Oh, you got cocaine, boy. We're going to take that vehicle off of you." You know, like boss hog type scum. Look, you know, this is what it leads to. When you don't have any recourse, people choose to dominate the living bejesus out of you, and they love the power trip. And I don't think it's a brilliant idea. This is all I'm saying, you know? This is all I'm saying. I don't think it's a good idea to give egomaniacs lots of power. It's just not a good idea. I mean, if somebody could prove me wrong and point to times in history where giving psychopathic egomaniacs inordinate amounts of unquestionable power turned out to be grand peace and happiness and mung beans for everybody, I'm very keen to see that information, because all the stuff that I've seen has produced the direct opposite. Okay? Extermination, ring a bell, genocide, ringing a bell. It's not a brilliant idea. It's pretty straightforward, I would have thought. Now, New Zealand, we are in an election year. And if you kind of disagree with recommendations in the report that the New Zealand government's getting, then I suggest you contact your local Member of Parliament. Preferably ambush them with a camera on the street. Like me! Because they're scum. And they don't deserve a lick of happiness. Honestly. Their lives should be freaking miserable right now, just so that the concept of justice sinks in, you know? I've always thought that the people are the rulers and the government people are the servants. You know, why don't we put them in chains, chain them to their desks, and have them argue and bandy out issues until the issues are done and finished, and only then will the people unlock them for their desks so they can go to a bathroom break. Okay, they should be prisoners. Straight up. It'd be classic. And you'd be surprised how much they'd get done, because the only way they'd be able to be unlocked each night to go home to their families is if they got something accomplished. Something that didn't sell out the entire country to foreign banks, preferably. It's just the frustration. And this is the interesting thing about frustration with government, is that it's endless. There is no possibility that the amount of stuff that the government will ever stop frustrating it, okay? It is not going to happen. So, how do you deal with such a frustrating state of affairs when everything's just absolutely crazy, nuts, and off the frickin' wall? Well, perhaps we can provide some alternatives, you know? Give somebody the idea that perhaps, I don't know, they can make a difference in this world. That there's something telling them, hey, maybe you should just shush for a moment, stop talking at people, and start listening for a change. Stop worrying about the ridiculously insignificant problems and start focusing on the core of the problems. You retarded scum. But of course, I don't want to tar all politicians with a brush. Because, of course, there's some good people that want to get themselves involved in politics. Now, how many of those actually wind up getting elected, though? That's my question. You know, plenty of good people do want to represent the people of this country in the House of Parliament. They do not, on the other hand, have the resources to do so. They do not have all this mainstream media advertising, talking about them every day, talking it up, choosing which candidates, and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, when was the last time we didn't get a banker or a socialist as Prime Minister of the New Zealand? You know, it's just, you know, it's the same old story. Everywhere you look, everything's just, well, basically, it's whack ass, man. Whack ass to the days.
one could conceive, of course, that there's a possibility that eventually humanity might get itself out of this rut. Rut meaning open-ended grave. I have hope that we can, because after all, we haven't been cut off air just yet. I may have spoken too soon. And, you know, it's like people are worried about jinxing themselves by, I don't know, have you ever actually had that experience where you'll be like, oh, man, no, this guy getting elected, he's going to screw us all over. And the person who just voted for him says, oh, man, don't tell me that, okay? You'll jinx it.
Call,
and it's like, no, I'm not jinxing it. They are going to rob you. And it's because you're afraid of it being jinxed that it was jinxed from the start because you didn't realize that you didn't. Background people, okay? Don't vote for a party. Vote for an individual. Find out who that individual is. Do a freaking Google search. You can find out immense amount of information on people these days. And why wouldn't you? Finding out who you're actually voting for and why you're voting for them, what their track record is a very smart thing to do. And it's not a worthless effort. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. And we'll be right back.
Must be some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief.
Welcome back.
Drink my wine.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's alternative media. Now, there's so much stuff to actually read out from Guerrilla Media. I just can't believe it because it's just such bad news, man. All of it, you know? Seriously, there's a lot of bad news going on. Doesn't mean you should be, you know, upset or worried about it or anything like that. Just means you should be freaking out. Anyway, Home Rule takes a beating as Maine defeats food freedom bills. In the state that made international news this year when three towns passed a food sovereignty ordinance, two bills that would have bolstered them at the state level met with defeat in Maine's Legislative Agriculture, Conservation and Forestry Committee. Sponsored by Representative Walter Kumega, LD 366, was rejected by the Ag Committee on May 11th. The Raw Milk Bill would have obviated licensing for the direct sale from farmer to consumer and protected small operations from overly burdensome rules recently imposed at the bureaucratic level. Requiring someone with two cows or a handful of goats to invest $10,000 or more to build an inspectable facility doesn't make economic sense, Kumega told Food Freedom. Hand milking is perfectly acceptable method and does not need the same facilities that a machine milking operation does. LD 366 seeks to restore an exemption that was standard practice up until 2 years ago when it was changed by administrative decision. And so basically, the upshot is the government is making small independent farms more or less illegal, and they're giving big tax breaks and all the legislative power behind the big mega agribusinesses, okay, who basically get a lot of their stuff from other farmers, you know, co-ops and such like that. And they centrally bring them in and wind up doing crappy things, so homogenization and all of that kind of stuff. It kills all the vital enzymes that are supposed to be good for you that you can absorb from milk, okay? Fresh, raw milk, okay? That's good for you. All this crap that you're buying in the store, even if they say it's organic, you know, sometimes you can't even trust that. And as a result, of people waking up to the fact that their milk is poisoned, their food is poisoned, and all and a lot of their organic vegetables are still just wrapped in BPA plastic and sprayed with goodness knows what anyway, you know, because they just change the definitions of what's healthy and what's not, you know. Cancer, for example, once a long time ago, was extremely, extremely rare. Now 1 in 2 or 1 in 3 people get it? What the heck is going on? This bill is going to the Senate now, and we'll come back to the House for another vote, advising, this is what the Senator Duda is saying, of course, is advising that he may work on an amendment with a member of the Ag Committee and try run it again. Now, it seems, of course, that the food sovereignty is something that these big, mega agribusinesses don't want, obviously, because, hey, why would you want competition when you can just really screw everybody? Screw them hardcore, you know? One would conceive that competition is not something that government or major businesses want because it threatens their dominance. Now, on the other hand, of course, when they say, oh, we're going to introduce more competition into the economy, we're going to make things much better and more efficient, they're just basically saying, we're going to come in, take everything over, and destroy the country. You know, pretty much the opposite of whatever a politician tells you is most likely the truth. Also, speaking of the truth and the silver bullet that it'll give us to you, British police sanction killer bullets. From May 12th. The British police are to use bullets designed deliberately to inflict more damage to the targets under the pretext that officers should be able to intercept terrorists immediately. You know what? As if killer bullets already aren't deadly enough. The police said their marksmen in London will be armed with the new rounds as their standard ammunition. Metropolitan Police Chief said they had opted for the rounds for their huge debilitating quality when hitting a target, and their lower chance of passing through the body to hit someone else. Be good for crowd control, wouldn't you think? The announcement by the police has raised worries that mistaken victims will be dealt such an injury that they are left no chance of survival after being hit by the bullets. Well, yeah, that's a natural byproduct of making things deadlier. People are going to die, and the innocent die with the rest of them. Officers shot Jean-Charles de Menezes with the same kind of bullets at Stockwell Tube Station back in 2005, who was mistaken for a terrorist. In actual fact, he was just an electrician. The police mistake cost Menezes his life. According to the police, their new rounds petal upon entry into the body like a flower, but denied that they were dum-dum. The slang used for a bullet banned by the Hague Convention of 1899, which broke into several pieces on impact. It should never be referred to as dum-dum, a slang term of ammunition deliberately and illegally altered by criminals to cause maximum injury and suffering, the police insisted. The force insisted the police, and you notice how they just keep insisting? The force insisted the bullets do not splinter, allowing medics to recover it in one piece, though targets suffer much such serious injuries that leave them with almost no chance to live. So, if you've got a nice little police state cooked up, ready for a population that's going to start going wild as food prices spiral out of control, gas prices too, and taxes, and as your civil liberties and all of that kind of start to get confiscated, you're going to need to kill quite a few people. Now, people don't understand that the reason why they consistently pass draconian legislation and stuff that'll kill you, stuff that'll tax you, et cetera, is because they actually have an end goal in mind. They're not just doing it willy-nilly because some dude shot some dude down in some place. Okay? That just doesn't happen. Parliament is a servant of foreign banks, okay? The foreign banks want total domination of every country in the entire world, what they lovingly call the New World Order. Oh, and we have our special guest, Sherry Kane, back on.
So I was ejected from the conversation. What happened, Vinny?
Well, that's a very good question. There's been some hiccups and some technical malfunctions all over the place, and apparently it's to do with some magical call switching thingy that we have at the board in Austin, Texas, which our fabulous board op Dan really hates. So, apologies for any interruptions there, Sherry. But we have only about 3 minutes left to go. So, if you have anything pressing to note and events that are upcoming that you'd like people to know about, fire away.
Well, we're going to be at the Conspiracy Conference. Recent thing that we're going to be doing is we are going to be at the Joshua Tree Music Festival this weekend and talking about the 528 frequency, and our friend Scott Huckabee is also going to be performing there. And then in June, we're going to be at the Conspiracy Conference in San Jose, California. We're going to be debating the COINTELPRO Asian provocateurs and talking about the Gulf oil spill disaster in relation to our article that we wrote about it being an inside job and the Jesse Ventura TV episode that we were on about that article. And that's pretty much the most newest events coming up, and anything beyond that, I will get back to you on.
And also, you're sending around a big newsletter update about all this as well. And how can people subscribe to that newsletter?
Oh, they can go to healthyworldnewsletter.com. That's actually the healthyworldnewsletter.com is the website for the archives for any newsletters you've missed from us. If you want to sign up for our newsletter, you can go to healthyworldstore.com. If you want to partner with us, you can go to healthyworldaffiliates.com. And if you want to transpose your music into the 528 frequency of love, you can go to 528records.com. Or i528tunes.com. If you're a musician and you upload your music, you'll get 60% royalties for anyone that puts a donation in for your music. You'll get 60% of that. And it's a great way for you to get your music out there if you're a musician.
Indeed, and thank you very much, Sherry, for dropping by. Sorry about the technical issues, of course. It was quite frustrating for me, too. Now, next week, ladies and gentlemen, we have rafts of fabulous guests that we're just dreaming up right at the moment. And quite frankly, thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in this week to the Vinny Eastwood Show, because, you know, we love you very, very much and appreciate it so much that people actually take the time out of their busy days and lives in the New World Order system to listen to the lighter side of genocide. And if you'd like to see more or catch up on episodes you've missed, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com or americanfreedomradio.com and check out the archives. We'll see you again sometime.